Welcome to Forums for a Future. The subject of the current series of podcasts is entitled Living in the Future Tense. This series is based on the proposition that the choices we make today will have irreversible consequences within our own lifetime. Thus, for those of us living in this, the postmodern era, our new reality is that we are living in the future tense. Today is tomorrow. In the previous era, the modern era, people lived in the present tense. They believed that they could have whatever they wanted now. They lived as if there was no tomorrow. However, the defining feature of living our life in the future tense is that we are currently taking to the limit every aspect of our economic, political, and social existence. The clearest example is the rapid exponential growth in world population over the past 100 years, which has exceeded the capacity of the planet to replace the energy used and to absorb the waste produced. But there are many other indications that we are living in exponential times, for which population growth can serve as a metaphor for the more general concept of taking it to the limit one more time. The political, economic, and social reality of meeting the limits will be the defining moments of the postmodern era. The time span is a 50-year interval encompassing the lifespan of the majority of people who are alive today. We must now start living in the future tense, for today is our tomorrow. Greenhouse gas emissions are one of the many specific issues that we are taking to the limit yet one more time. For the past 1,000 years, the level of CO2 in the atmosphere has remained relatively constant at 280 parts per million. But starting with the Industrial Revolution, it has been increasing at an accelerating rate to 390 parts per million, well above the upper safety limit of 350 parts per million. In December of 2009, the United Nations held a climate change summit in Copenhagen to attempt to set world policy standards for greenhouse gas emissions. The United States and China were the principal players as the two top greenhouse gas producing countries. The summit ended without any comprehensive agreement. At the summit in Cancun in 2010, the nations focused on refining the technical details of the goals established at Copenhagen and reaffirmed their pledge to lower emissions, but postponed any major decisions on how this was to be accomplished. Part 1 in this series, Podcast 35, explained why the proposals of both the United States and China at Cancun and Copenhagen were self-serving, and why neither could expect the other to agree with them. Part 2 in the series, Podcast 36, provided a rationale for an alternative world standard that is equally fair to both countries. And today, Part 3 in the series, Podcast 37, will explain why neither the United States or China have been able politically to reach an agreement, and it will provide the means for achieving mutual cooperation. Part 3, the high-stakes negotiations of climate change. The additional concepts of national ecological footprints, biocapacity, and overshoot introduced in Part 2 complicate the negotiations by presenting difficult internal political considerations for both the United States and China. For the United States, paying backwards is to undo past damage. This will reduce the average standard of living and require an internal renegotiation of the distribution of wealth and income. In China, paying forward will compromise the effort to reduce the growing wealth and income disparities between rural and urban areas. Each national government holds political power by protecting such sovereign national interests against the claims of other nations. This is the reason both countries made self-serving proposals described in Part 1. There will not be any solution to the climate crisis until the reality of this negotiating context is acknowledged and is addressed by creating mechanisms that make cooperation between the competing nations politically feasible. There are three sets of players: the developed, the developing, and the least developed nations. The United States is the proxy for the developed nations, and China for the developing nations. Each of these two sets contain a small number of pivotal nations who will have to work together bilaterally to achieve a united front. Treating the United States and China as proxies for their respective groups places a special responsibility on these two countries for world leadership. It is also an acknowledgement of the unrealistic expectation that a United Nations summit of 190 nations can reach a consensus. However, creating an equivalent proxy position for the least developed nations is a more difficult task due to their desperate need and their forced dependency on developed countries, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. Many of these least developed countries may need support from worldwide environmental, non-governmental organizations simply because they are not in any position to drive a hard bargain. There are two sets of competing self-interests to be resolved. The first is the claim of the least developed countries against the others. These are largely the creditor nations who are the victims of loss of their biocapacity due to overshoot by others. The second is the competing interests of the developing countries to protect their wealth and the developing countries to protect their growth. The two sets of competing self-interests need to be considered separately. A world solution requires the resolution of both. Neither alone is sufficient. Consider first the competing interests of the least developed versus the developed and developing nations. The least developed nations are currently too poor, too sick, and too politically unstable to provide domestic, physical, and psychological security. They are, however, the holders of the remaining biocapacity capital that must be managed to bring world consumption and supply into balance. Thus, they are in a position to demand from developing and developing nations the means to fully participate in a globalized world. For the least developed countries, the only issue is the percentage of the world gross domestic product that the developed and the developing countries must share to ensure their participation in a global economic community, and that their inclusion only minimally creates an environmental impact. They deserve this assistance to combat the effects of global warming as the proper reparations for the expropriation of their excessive biocapacity. At the previous climate summit, the two principal proxy players, the United States and China, did agree in principle on the essential commitment for aid to the least developed, although without any mechanism for delivery or strategy for how it would fit into a comprehensive treaty. This initial agreement in principle for a United Nations administered Green Climate Fund opens the way for addressing the unfinished business of Copenhagen and Cancun of moving to an equally fair world standard based on the per capita alternative described in Part 2 that takes into account ecological footprint, biocapacity, and overshoot. The starting point is the acknowledgement that our national governments are involved in international high-stakes negotiations that demand politically difficult, if not impossible, cooperative choices. Fortunately, due to the fact that the two proxy countries are in a complementary position with respect to what needs to be done, China to redirect growth and the United States excess, each has the capacity to take internal sovereign actions which will have the effect that the other must voluntarily accept the per capita solution as the best way to protect their own self-interest. First, the production of consumer goods can no longer be at the expense of a sustainable environment. The quality of life is a production cost. Specifically, this means the United States and other developed nations would unilaterally impose an import duty equivalent to the deferred environmental costs of imported consumer goods if China itself does not redirect an equivalent proportion of its gross domestic product toward internal green investments and a worldwide sharing of its green technologies. These are internal decisions that could not be made by the Chinese government without the instrumental contingency of having the United States add to the price of China's products the unaccounted for environmental impact cost and redirect them to the Green Climate Fund of the United Nations, but only if China does not do so itself. Second, the deficit financing of U.S. overshoot excess can no longer be at the expense of a sustainable environment. Specifically, the reduction of excess means China and other developing nations with a trade surplus would unilaterally impose a proportional cutoff of financial support for the annual U.S. trade deficit and cumulative debt if the United States does not reduce its large ecological footprint by redirecting an equivalent proportion of its national excess toward payments to the Green Climate Fund and through greater sharing of its advanced technologies. These are internal decisions that could not be made by the U.S. government without instrumental contingency of China forcing emergency financial austerity measures on us if we did not ourselves reinvent a new sustainable American way of life. There is no doubt this is a formidable, perhaps impossible task. However, the first step is to talk about the issues in plain, truthful language, beginning with the American people. These are the issues and the choices we face, either as rational problem solving now or as a harsh reality later. If democracy is to work, it requires straight talk by responsible people, including, above all else, elected government officials. Surely, we can risk this public trust if we believe in our own civic processes. We have nothing more to lose and everything to gain. Now is the time. With perspective required to negotiate a self-imposed set of equivalent constraints is 1, to increasingly see ourselves not just as citizens of the nation, but also as citizens of the world. 2, to increasingly trust the power of balance over winning the balance of power. And 3, to increasingly relinquish the knowledge required for food, health, and security to the public domain as human progress, rather than a commodity for financial gain. If there is to be any doubt, think on these 3 principles.
We do not want the final refrain of our era to read. We are taking it to the limit, one last time.